I'm Marty Moscowen, and this is Radio Times on Radio Row near the ladies' room at the Wells Fargo Center, site of the DNC in Philadelphia. The last time the Democrats held a convention in Philadelphia was back in 1948 when Harry Truman got the presidential nomination after a fractious process. Democrats are hoping this year will be a more harmonious event following an unexpectedly competitive race between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Adding to the drama are the 19,000 emails just released by WikiLeaks revealing hostility towards Sanders by some members of the DNC. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, head of the DNC, is stepping down at the end of the week and will have a diminished role at the convention. And on Saturday, Hillary Clinton announced that Virginia Senator Tim Kaine is her pick for vice president. Well, sitting across from me is Sam Stein, senior politics editor for Huffington Post. And nice to meet you in person,
what
Sam.
What a pleasure to meet you in person.
Thank you so much. And joining us from WHYY, one of these gentlemen sitting in my seat at the WHYY studios, Ron Fournier, senior politics columnist for the National Journal, wrote a book a couple of months ago. In fact, was a guest on Radio Times talking about that book called Love That Boy. Ron Fournier, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Great being back, and I got to say your seat is more comfortable than the other one.
Fair enough. Also with us is Domenico Montanaro, and he's lead editor of politics and digital audience for NPR. And Domenico, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me.
Let me begin with you, Sam, only because you were here and I was just got off the phone a couple of minutes ago with Governor Rendell basically saying that Debbie Wasserman Schultz should not wait till the end of the week to leave, that she should go right now.
Yeah.
Is this going to overtake the convention?
No. It might cause some distractions.
This is the WikiLeaks, of course.
Yes. So the background here is that it's been now exposed. You can say that the DNC had its finger on the scales here, that they clearly wanted Hillary as a candidate to emerge from the primary, and that people associated close to and working for Debbie Wasserman Schultz tried to plant stories that would make Bernie look bad. So her
questions
tenure,
about his faith?
Yeah, questions about whether he actually was religious at all. It was questions whether he actually was observant, not questions about his Judaism. So she basically had to go. She had to fall on this one. The question that everyone's asking is, well, why is she going in this fashion? Why even speak at all? Because she knows she's going to get pretty bad heckling from the crowd. She got one this morning when she appeared at the Florida delegation. My reporting suggests that this was a negotiated settlement. With the Clinton campaign, basically, that she agreed to go, but she wanted to have at least one or two speeches to be able to say, you know, I put this convention together. I don't want to just hand it off. And I get that instinct, but I think Governor Rendell is right on his instincts here that it's probably going to be more of a distraction than benefits the convention.
We are not going to spend the whole hour on this, but Ron Fournier, let me give you a chance to weigh in on this. And do you think this will color what happens here in Philadelphia? And obviously the Democrats looking for a unified convention.
Yeah, it will color it as much as, or possibly as much as the Cruz business did last week. But Sam's right, it's not going to overshadow it. That's probably too strong of a word. And my reporting tells me the same thing. And I also know, though, there's some now second thinking in the Clinton camp. And I wouldn't be surprised if she does not gavel it. As a matter of fact, I would be surprised if she does. I think what she's got to do is get on the first train out of town, go back to the DNC, fire three or four people, and hand in her keys. She's done.
Is she a stubborn person? Does anyone know, Ron?
Yeah, she's very stubborn. She's also, like a lot of people are in our business, very self-centered. She's someone, for example, who even though she has all kinds of meetings and public events with President Obama, she insists that her photo gets taken with him every time, which is kind of bizarre. So she's really worried about her legacy and her, as Sam suggested, the way this will be spun. But what she doesn't realize is this is bad for the party and bad for her. If you see the video, go online and look at the video of her this morning at her own state's Democratic caucus. She was booed off the little stage. It was humiliating, and she's got to get out of town.
Domenico, let me turn to you. And already we're getting lots of email comments, Facebook comments, tweets, basically saying she's got to go. This is sort of feeding the narrative that Bernie Sanders and his supporters had that as Sam said, the DNC had their thumb on the scale for Hillary Clinton.
Well, look, this week the stakes are high for the Democratic Party. I mean, higher than they would have been, in fact, if you didn't see these polls now coming out showing that Donald Trump did get something of a bounce coming out of last week, which it might be a little surprising given that, yes, I know that every time there seems to be some kind of a bounce, but it was a really uneven week last week. You had the the disunity with Ted Cruz and even the delegates on the floor who wanted some rules changes. And meanwhile, Bernie Sanders had come out and endorsed Hillary Clinton. Democrats were trying to show a different kind of convention. And here you have, you know, Deborah Wasserman Schultz going, which is what the Bernie Sanders supporters had wanted. You have a rules change in place. You have platform stuff that that they were able to extract. And yet you have this disunity that you're seeing, and you see Donald Trump taking the lead in various polls. And meanwhile, you have Bernie Sanders folks out on Independence Mall protesting things like TPP.
I wonder, I'm looking at you, Sam. You were in Cleveland. I'm sure other guests were as well. Do you think we're going to hear from the Democrats at the Wells Fargo Center? Lock him up?
No, maybe show us your tax returns will be the chance, something like that. That was an interesting thing that happened in Cleveland. I think it sort of went underappreciated in the background of the Melania Trump plagiarism stories and Ted Cruz booing, which is, you had a convention and several speakers who were talking for the imprisonment of the opposition candidate. That is rough stuff. I mean, that's going beyond what's usual in terms of discourse. Certainly, there's a lot of harsh rhetoric for Democrats with respect to Donald Trump, but I don't expect that. I certainly wouldn't expect that.
None of the sort of lock her up. I wonder if I can turn to you, Ron, and also to you, Domenico. We had some protesters on our show a couple of weeks ago, and one of them, a very well-known protester activist here in Philadelphia, Sherry Hunkala, talking about the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, from her perspective, Pepsi or Coke, that there was really no difference. And I wonder, Ron, what you think the Democrats have to do to win over some of these very reluctant Hillary supporters.
Yeah, you know, there's about 25% of the electorate right now that is undecided. And although a lot of those people traditionally lean one way or the other, what they really share is they are among the most disfranchised, disillusioned, angry voters who really don't like either candidate very much. So if you can look at that on one hand and say what basically her best chance is just to disqualify Trump. To make the point that, we understand you want change in the worst way, but he really would be the worst way. I happen to think, though, that she also has to, and I think she will, offer a more affirmative message. The kind of thing that her husband was able to do in 1992, to give people some hope and some something around the corner that's better than the kind of bile and grim and darkness that they saw from Donald Trump. But her biggest hurdle is no matter what she says, two quarters of the American public don't trust her, and I don't know how you fix that.
Well, let me turn to you, Domenico, where we're talking about Hillary Clinton and her high negatives and also Donald Trump with his high negatives. Are those negatives very different? When people are highly critical of these two candidates, are they critical for the same reasons, or is there something unique about each of them? And since we're talking about the Democrats here in Philadelphia, something uniquely negative about Hillary?
Oh, I think that there's a difference, certainly, in the reasons why people don't like one or the other of them. For Hillary Clinton, it's really because she's a politician who's done things as politics as usual, that a lot of people view her that way. She's had a lot of self-inflicted wounds when it comes to things like setting up her own email server. Even Democrats will acknowledge that that was a really bad idea and politically made no sense. Why she would take $625,000 or whatever it was from Goldman Sachs to deliver speeches when she was clearly running for president at that time. You know, she wasn't a declared candidate, but she knew she was going to be running. Why you would go and do those things and make those kinds of decisions and then seem to, you know, not be completely forthcoming about that, that really has hurt her honest and trustworthy numbers. Then when you look at someone like Donald Trump, quite clearly the things that he has said when it comes to any non-white groups and women, you know, there are a lot of people who have just looked at that and said that those are disqualifying. You know, for all the people who talked about Donald Trump being Teflon during the primary, was true. He was Velcro with the rest of the electorate.
Hmm. How, Sam, does someone like a Hillary Clinton reintroduce herself after being First Lady, Secretary of State, a senator from New York? Well, people feel like they know her.
Sure, but I mean, keep in mind, the people she does have to win over in the Bernie universe tend to be young. They tend to be new to the political process, not affiliated with political parties. which suggests that maybe they don't know her as well as you and I do, or people who have been at this for a little while, or people who are of an older generation. And so one of the ways that you traditionally do that is you go heavy on biography, and I expect you'll see a lot of biographical stuff here. Another way you do it is that you have surrogates who people trust go out and vouch for them. So Bernie's speech tonight is a huge, huge moment in this convention, and it will be supplemented by Elizabeth Warren's speech, who's doing the keynote address tonight. They need to go out there and they need to vouch for Hillary Clinton. I don't know if Bernie's going to do that so much as present his own agenda, but those are ways that you try to get that number, that unfavorable number, down a little bit.
I'll jump in, though.
Go ahead.
This is Ron. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, this is Ron. Sam, I agree completely on the first. On the second, the problem with millennials, if you look at the data, they really don't buy endorsements, product endorsements, or even political endorsements. So although it's important that Bernie Sanders does this, it's more important what she does. So you're right. I think the bio part is a big part of it. Also, I think she needs to run right towards this trust thing. That generation really loves authenticity. They're really forgiving, really tolerant. So she stood up there and said something to the effect of, you know, I know I've let you down.
Yeah.
And here's what I'm going to do to be more transparent, maybe put some transparency policy, you know, in place. I think that would be more appealing.
And you've begun to see her sort of take a cue, as hard as it probably is for her to do, where she showed a tiny bit of humility saying, you know, I know I could have done better. She said this in a speech about the partisan rhetoric in the country. She said, I know I've contributed to it. I've talked to aides who say it was very hard for her to admit even fault in the email scandal, but she did eventually get there and say, you know, it was something I should not have done, and I regret doing it. So these are baby steps, and she has a long way to go, as Ron notes, but you can tell that they understand that that's where they have to be.
This is a more Freudian question, but I wonder if we're talking about millennials, whether they see Hillary Clinton as their mom who tells them to clean up their room or get their homework done.
What do they think of Bernie? Is he
well,
the
I
uncle?
Don't know.
And what do they think of Trump? He's the crazy guy in the closet.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to do a whole other hour on that.
Exactly. Domenico, do you want to weigh in on
that? Yeah, I do think, like, when you talk about improving numbers, I do find it fascinating coming off of Cleveland that convention was all about Donald Trump. You know, nobody else got the same level of applause. You know, there was sort of scattered attendance by the delegates when other people spoke. But when Donald Trump got there, whenever he was there, everybody was in their seats. There was rousing applause. It's clearly his party. You know, it's not the George W. Bush party or Mitt Romney party. It's more of a Tea Party plus Donald Trump. And it's a very different kind of thing, and it's all about him. When it comes to this convention, it's almost the inverse, where you've got all these Democratic celebrity all-stars who are coming in to try, in a way, to boost Hillary Clinton. And she needs, like Ron said, to do some of this herself, a lot of it herself. But you are going to have President Obama, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Michelle Obama. Those are pretty big rock stars in the Democratic Party who are going to be vouching for her in a way that Donald Trump didn't have at the Republican convention.
We have to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention. We're here at the Wells Fargo Center, site of the DNC in Philadelphia. That's Domenico Montanaro, Ron Fournier, and Sam Stein, our guests. You can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscowane, talking with Sam Stein, senior politics editor for the Huffington Post, Ron Fournier up at the WHYY studios, senior politics columnist for National Journal. Also up there, WHYY, Domenico Montanaro, lead editor of politics and digital audience for NPR. I do want to move on from the WikiLeaks revelations, but nonetheless, let me just play a clip of Bernie Sanders speaking yesterday on CNN.
I mean, there's no question to my mind, and I think no question to any objective observer's mind, that the DNC was supporting Hillary Clinton and was in opposition to our campaign. So I'm not quite shocked by this. And that is why many, many months ago, I made it clear that I thought Debbie Wasserman Schultz should resign, should step down, not only because of the prejudice I think they showed during the campaign, but also because I think we need a new leadership of the Democratic Party, which is going to open up that party to working people, to young people, to have the kind of vitality we need to not only win the presidency, but gain control of the Senate and the House as well.
A very familiar voice, Bernie Sanders. Sam, as I said, I do want to move on, but looking back at the Sanders campaign, he didn't win, but it seems like he got a lot when you look at the platform and the sort of positioning that he has here at the Wells Fargo Center and in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I think it does. I've talked to people. It's funny. I talked to people who think he didn't get a lot. I talked to people who think he got a ton. I think it's somewhere in between. The platform is important, but it's symbolic mostly. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to have those policies, but that's what he wanted. He got some changes to the way that superdelegates will decide the nomination, which is consequential. And I guess now you can say he got Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Yeah.
And that will definitely be consequential.
1, 2, and 3.
But I think the key thing here is to understand just how progressive the Democratic Party really is relative to where it once was. The fact that Elizabeth Warren is going to be the keynote speaker, when in the past you had people like Mark Warner, Harold Ford, Evan Bayh.
Very centrist.
Centrist,
right?
Democrats. I mean, you can't look at the party now and say it's not incredibly more progressive than it was during the Clinton administration and even during the Obama administration.
Let me turn to you, Ron, and also to you, Domenico. As we know, Tim Kaine is Hillary's pick for vice president. She says he's progressive. They were on 60 Minutes last night. How do you see him, Ron?
Oh, he's certainly more centrist than Hillary Clinton, and even more centrist than where the party is now, because Sam's exactly right. He's not as moderate as, say, a Joe Lieberman, so he has moved to the left, and the idea of a centrist Democrat has moved to the left. In addition to that, he's an incredibly experienced, successful manager, from mayor to governor to senator. A real decent man of high character, really well-respected in his state and in Washington, and someone who I think is a good political mate for Hillary Clinton. I think he's someone, if there is such thing as an advantage that a vice president can bring to a ticket, and if somebody can translate their character traits to somebody on their ticket, Kaine's going to be able to do that. I think he could make a difference of a point or two here or there. I thought he was a real solid pick.
And, you know, to Ron's
Domenico,
point.
Domenico, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, to Ron's point, I mean, it's still okay to be liked in this country, you know?
Yeah, he is.
What a novel idea.
But it seems like liberals are unhappy with this pick because he's not enough of a fighter, or he wrote one letter to Wall Street, or, like, whatever, like, kind of small things they get upset about with Tim Kaine. He can have the potential to round Hillary Clinton out. You know, he's quote-unquote boring. He said himself that he's boring. He's not an exciting pick. You know, he's about as exciting as flat-front khakis or something, you know. But people like flat-front khakis. There's nothing wrong with that. He's like a neighbor who might fix your fence or something without asking. Like, you know,
plus, I could use one of those neighbors. Yeah,
but,
no.
The other side to boring is responsible. And, you know, he's not someone who Democrats are likely going to have to worry about in a debate, which is the main, thing that people are going to see in the biggest audience between the convention and the debate. You don't want someone to mess up. You know, the first rule of picking a vice presidential pick is do no harm. And Tim Kaine is a governing pick. He's somebody who gets along with Republicans. He's somebody who can kind of help to push through sort of incremental progressive measures. He's certainly a Democrat. There's no question about that. But he's just not somebody who's an ideologue who believes that you can get everything in one fell swoop.
And he's got a chance of connecting with these non-college-age whites that are bleeding out of the Democratic Party. And Hillary's got to get some of them. I'm from the Detroit area. I grew up around Reagan Democrats. He's the kind of guy that might be able to get a few of them back. And what you're talking about is unfortunately what's happening in both parties. We have these purity tests, and if you don't check all the boxes, the in the Republican Party, the far right's gonna fry you. And if you don't check all the boxes in the Democratic Party, the liberal base is gonna fry you. He was a smart pick. I thought it showed her confidence that she thinks she can win without making the obvious progressive pick.
Go ahead, Sam.
Well, I just... Domenico's love of flat-front khakis is
astounding. What are you wearing?
I'm wearing chinos. You know, that's okay. Not bad. But, you know...
Okay, so as exciting
aside,
as a nice pair of chinos that are maybe too expensive.
Putting that aside. You know, I think there's a little bit more complexity to this pick than just, you know, one side likes him, one the other doesn't. Donald Trump is not defined by parties. There's some sort of cross-ideological element to his candidacy. And one of the things that he has done that's turned this race on its head is that he's really become the first major Republican in a long time that I remember who's gone really hard at, you know, financial service industries for corrupting the system. And it just so happens that one of the weaknesses that Kaine brings to this ticket when it comes to liberals in the party is that he has been generally supportive of the financial service industry. So that is a little bit of a complexity to this pick that I think could prove problematic. Now, if you spend some time with Tim Kaine and you talk to him, incredibly thoughtful human being, his foreign policy is something that gets overlooked, but he's deep thinking on foreign policy. He was an early supporter of the Iran deal. And I think the biggest contrast, though, is stylistically, which is what we're hinting at, which is here you have two incredibly negatively perceived candidates known primarily as fighters. And she picks this guy who is a ho-hum, let's get along. We can actually, you know, merge the parties together, forge some compromise, sort of in the clone of the Obama message. And I think that's where the contrast is, a stylistic contrast.
What I thought was kind of interesting, policy-wise, is that, you know, he's very pro-free trade and was pro-TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And then, you know, the Clinton campaign affirmed on Saturday that he had a come-to-Jesus moment, and now it says in this form it's not okay. Kind of the way she once thought it was the gold standard, but now believes that it's not. And the other thing, though, that I found interesting is that, you know, Hillary Clinton is known as more of a hawk than Barack Obama when it comes to intervention on foreign policy. And Tim Kaine famously is very much believes that the president needs to go to Congress to get approval, this AUMF, the authorization for use of military force. So I wonder how they'll kind of balance those two things. I don't know if, like, he'll be pushed out of the Oval Office when he says, well, you know, you really got to go to Congress. And that's nice, Tim. Like, head back to your office or whatever.
Ron, let me put something to you, because one of the descriptions I read of Tim Kaine was that he's there to help win over states like Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, often called a battleground state, even though I think it's been something like 20 or 30 years since we voted a Republican into the White House. But nonetheless, Donald Trump did very well in this state. Hillary Clinton has some connections, but it's, you know, it looks at least today like a potential toss-up. Do you think Tim Kaine is that appeal to that, if I can say, that white male voter who just couldn't imagine voting for Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, I think he's got a chance to bridge that divide more so than Hillary does. And if Trump stands a chance of winning this election, he's got to be able to sweep Pennsylvania and right through the industrial Midwest. And I think Kaine can help her there. But really, we're just talking about on the edges. A candidate can only really hurt you, like Palin, I think, did for McCain. It's hard to find evidence of a candidate really helping, a VP candidate helping the nominee more than a point or two. And I think you could give her that, but this is really going to come down. People are going to decide whether or not, you know, how badly they want change. Are they willing to take a risk on Donald Trump, who really is temperamentally not fit for the job and certainly not ready for it? Or are they going to go for somebody who they might see is ready for it, but boy, they just really can't stand and trust her?
That's Ron Fournier sitting in my chair at WHYY, senior politics columnist for National Journal, also up at WHYY. Domenico Montanaro, lead editor of the Politics and Digital, Politics and Digital Audience for NPR, and sitting across from me here at the Wells Fargo Center, site of the DNC, Sam Stein, senior politics editor for the Huffington Post. And we are talking about the race for the White House. And you can join the conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read a comment here. This has come up before. A Facebook comment from Sherry: would love to see someone talk about how Bernie Sanders was never a Democrat prior or took responsibility for moving other candidates forward. The Democratic Party is not just about electing a president, should support the candidates that will achieve its goals at all levels. And Sam, this is something we've talked about on Radio Times in the past, which is, yes, he ran as a Democrat. He's became a Democrat rather recently. Does that create problems for the party, do you think, or did it?
Oh, absolutely. I think this sort of bled into this whole controversy with the DNC. You know, for better or worse, Bernie Sanders is a foreigner, or was a foreigner, to the Democratic Party. And when you have an institution like this that, you know, wants to not just help the presidential ticket, but down ballot tickets, you're naturally disposed to the candidate that helps you with that mission. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, this is sort of one of those understated things that, you know, animated the entire race, which is a lot of the superdelegates, for instance, had, you know, very well-established relationships with the Clintons because they were part of the party apparatus. Bernie Sanders was never part of that party apparatus. He did some fundraising for the DSCC, but by and large, he was on the periphery. That might change now, but there is, you know, a legitimate case to make to these Bernie supporters and Bernie delegates. You know, the party that you wanted to change, you've just joined. I mean, this is a new thing.
And changed.
And, yeah, exactly.
Domenico, do you want to weigh in on that as well?
Well, I think the Democratic Party has certainly gotten more progressive. I think Sam alluded to that earlier. And, you know, I think that it's going to be a week that you're going to have to watch and see if it's going to be the kind of thing where Democrats can come together and figure out what they want to be able to do to be able to combat the Trump message. And I think Ron was right earlier when he said that Hillary Clinton needs to have kind of an affirmative message to be able to you know, make that work as opposed to it just being anti-Trump.
And the bigger story here, this is Ron, is both with Trump taking over the Republican Party and Bernie Sanders giving a good run for it, it just shows you how these parties are changing, how they're getting weaker, how there's more and more Americans who are looking for an alternative outside of the parties. Now, it's more easier than to make a run at them. You could argue that Barack Obama, although to a much lesser extent than Sanders and even more so than Trump, but in 2008, he came from the outside. Now, he was a registered Democrat, but he ran from outside the party structure. He took on the establishment candidate. And then when he won the presidency, he took his amazing political operation that he built from outside the DNC and set it off to the side, the OFA. And that's one reason why the DNC is so weak now and was run by someone who's finally being thrown out.
And that's the band. That's the band.
That's not me. You know,
that is not Sam Stein here. That's the band across the hall.
We didn't know if we were getting a rap.
I thought that was my cue.
Really?
Shut the heck
Ron
up.
Was, Ron was, that was the quietest Ron has been.
Yeah, really.
Ever.
Really.
Ever.
Well, and that raises a question that I had. So what is the purpose? I'm looking at you, Sam.
Sure.
What is the purpose, then, of this convention or any convention? As you all are saying, an unorthodox year, many people don't feel any affiliation to either Republican or Democratic Party. We know that Hillary Clinton's going to be the nominee. She's going to, you know, everyone's going to support her when Thursday night rolls around. We know millions of dollars is being spent as well.
So the convention served the purpose of having and gathering the biggest television and political audience probably all year, maybe with the debates as the next closest or a little bit near. And you basically get a chance to tell your story all over again. You keep in mind, so many people who vote are not paying attention at this point in time. They will start paying attention now. And you try to put on a flawless show. And that's not just for the person at the top of the ticket. It's for everyone who speaks here. It's for groups that come out and want to get something out. We're, you know, doing a thing with the DGA chair, Governor's Associate Chair Dan Malloy. He's going to be doing a big thing about redistricting. So there are messages that people want to get out, and this is the greatest way to do it.
Ron, though, I think when you were on the show talking about your book, Love That Boy, we were talking after the show about just what happens at conventions like this and whether even after the superdelegate fights and the sense that something is rigged, whether you think the Democratic Party will do a bit of soul searching about how they're going to nominate the next person for president.
Yeah, I think both parties have to do some soul searching and realizing that winning isn't enough, that just because they're forcing the public to make a binary choice and their party may win that binary choice, that most Americans want something and need something different. And we need huge structural reform in this country. And Governor Malloy, the redistricting reform is just a start. And a smart party would realize that it's got to really disrupt itself before it gets disrupted from the outside.
A Facebook message from Tony says, Debbie Wasserman Schultz has lost all credibility. It's no better than the Republican nomination. No good can come out of her not walking away. And as I said, Domenico, this could be a one-day story. It could be a four-day story. We heard Governor Rendell basically saying, you know, it's time for her to walk away today. What kind of pressure do you think she's under?
I think under massive pressure. I was shocked to hear Clinton's campaign manager, Robbie Mook, say this morning that she still intends to gavel in at the convention. I think that could be a potential disaster for the party with the massive kinds of boos like you heard for Ted Cruz last week. And that is completely the opposite of what Democrats want. I mean, I think when it comes to the question earlier that you had for Sam on what a convention is for, you know, a couple points on what Hillary Clinton needs to do. You know, likability, honest and trustworthy, and appealing to non-college whites are three vulnerabilities of hers that, in a way, a convention can help you address. We'll see how they go about that. She's got a lot of surrogates to help. She's got to be able to push through to do that, too. And the contrast from last week, given that Donald Trump really didn't reach out to any swing voters. Maybe there aren't any swing voters anymore. Maybe it is a base election. But for those of us who still think that there are some persuadables, some, not many, you know, you have to see just what kind of message Hillary Clinton and the Democrats can put forward that maybe was different than what Trump was offering.
What would it be like?
Go ahead, Ron.
I had a Democrat just email me and wondering what it would be like instead of having Debbie Wasserman Schultz gavel the convention order. What if Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders did that together? That's an interesting idea.
That is a very interesting idea.
What if Bernie Sanders became the party chairman? Howard Dean went and did it in 2004.
You could put
Bernie in charge. I don't know. Yeah. I haven't seen, you know, who, you know, they've got Donna Brazile as the interim chairwoman. I mean, she could certainly gavel in and out. It doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Everybody loves Donna.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense why you would allow Debbie Wasserman Schultz to be on the stage. I understand that, as Ron said earlier, that she's, you know, intemperate and she has her own, you know, want to feel like, hey, this has been her party. Why should she be pushed off the stage? But it's not really about her. It's about the party.
You know, Sam, we've talked almost 38 minutes and 27 seconds, and we haven't said the name Bill Clinton.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Bill.
Right. I didn't even mention him as one of those potential surrogates.
No, you didn't. Yeah. So what does that tell us, Sam?
Well, maybe it's by design. Obviously, you know, it's impossible not to know that he was a former president, now spouse of an aspiring president. You know, he gave a very, you know, probably the most memorable speech in the last convention. It was a real tour de force, and it probably overshadowed everyone else's speech. But I don't think that that's what the Clinton campaign wants this time. I mean, this is her moment. This is not his moment. And these things, the relationship between them is tricky for a variety of reasons. And my guess is that they don't want him to play an elevated role here because this is not about him. And you give off the message that she's sort of, you know, riding his coattails when in fact she's incredibly accomplished on her own and that she got to this point on her own and that, you know, she deserves to have her day in the spotlight.
Well, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation broadcasting from the Wells Fargo Center, the site of the Democratic National Convention, talking with Sam Stein, Ron Fournier and Domenico Montanaro about the race for the White House. Obviously, a lot of focus on the Democrats, but also the Republican Party as well. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia at the Wells Fargo Center, again, site of the DNC, rather near where the band has been practicing for tonight's events, and talking with NPR's Domenico Montanaro, the National Journal's Ron Fournier, and Sam Stein of Huffington Post. And you can call us. Who do you want for president? 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me read an email from Ruth Shu, who says, how much of Hillary's trust issue is manufactured by people who couldn't imagine a woman as president or her opponents in general? Now, I've got three men to answer that
Maybe
question.
Maybe you should answer that.
For us, I think it's a mixed bag. I think there's something about Hillary Clinton, or perhaps the Clintons in general, who rankle people. I also think that there are plenty of times when she is held to this standard that I just don't think a male candidate is held to, whether it's her hair, her wardrobe,
the volume of her voice,
whether she's supposed to apologize for herself. I'm looking at Sam, but Ron or Domenico, do you want to weigh in on that at all?
Yeah, I mean, look, frankly, a lot. You know, she's been in the spotlight for so long that it's not like any other woman. You know, she's been somebody who has been. Like Mara Liasson likes to say that, like, even paranoids have enemies.
That's right.
Like, I mean, like, it doesn't mean that they're not chasing you, but, you know, you kind of feel that way even more so. I mean, the thing is, it's just, I think that there is a way that she's perceived that is something that is very difficult to measure. You know, I think that a lot of it is subconscious. If there is some bias, that, like, a lot of men might look at her in a way that they're not attracted to her, or they don't think that she sounds the way that they would want her to sound, and they make a judgment that they'll then put something else off and say, well, I don't like her because of this other thing, and it has nothing to do with something superficial. I mean, that might be some of it, but I don't think that's the whole thing.
Yeah. I think that's right, but I mean, I think we also have statistics to supplement this, which is we've never elected a woman president. Our Senate continues to not be representative at all of the general population. Mm-hmm. Women in politics have incredibly tough times, and it's not just politics, it's the corporate world, media world, everywhere. Societally, we like to think of ourselves as advanced, but The data does not support that.
I agree.
Sam, you were telling me. Yeah, let me just jump in here, Ron, just for a second. Sam, you were saying before we went on the air, and I asked you, how often have you interviewed Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton? And you have interviewed Hillary Clinton with a very different impression when it's just one on one. And I've heard people say that time and time and again.
Yeah, and this is probably her shortcoming as a politician, not as a person, as a politician, which is that when you talk to her and the recorder's off and the camera's off and you're just there, it's just a very nice, friendly, funny human being. And then when the camera goes on or the recorder goes on, you can start to see the gears churning a little bit in the head. And I think that's a byproduct probably of 3 or 4 decades of dealing with very critical press coverage. And a lot of it's been brought on her own. But you can see how someone who goes through that grind wants to be incredibly careful with every word that she says, and it manifests itself in the way she talks during these interviews.
Ron, you want to weigh in on that at all or anything else?
Yeah, well, I've known the Clintons since the mid-'80s, and I'm one of those people who's seen the real Hillary. She really is charming and engaging and funny and someone who I have a lot of respect for personally. And I also know, going back to Arkansas, that sexism obviously is a part of this. There are some people who just can't get over the fact of her gender. But you know what? Life isn't fair, and she can only control her behavior. And the fact is, as Sam has alluded to, a lot of this has been brought on herself. A lot of the criticism that has come on her way, including the email scandal, is self-inflicted. Yeah. Right. That's something she has to own up to. And it would be great if she could learn as a politician to show more of herself, to be less afraid of making a mistake and letting people see and understand that if someone like me who's covered them for a long time, I would much rather sit down and have a conversation with her than her husband. And I think her husband's a fascinating guy. But she's really got the charisma in the room, even more so than her husband. But few people see that.
That's so fascinating, just because here we've got this seasoned politician running for the highest office in the land and the world who's still sort of uncomfortable with her public persona or presence.
Yeah, and look, that's part of what a convention can do. I mean, you can go out there and you can try to sell yourself and show people who you are. If you're self-critical, if you analyze how you sound or how you look or how you come across, all politicians do that. Does she have anybody on her team who's able to say, okay, let's go over this. How are we going to approach this? What are we going to say? What are we going to do? And you can reintroduce yourself. I mean, we were all talking about millennials and how a lot of them don't really know her or know this, other side. I mean, that's why they wanted to hold these small events early on, so that because they know that she's very good within the room. So she's got a challenge. She's going to have to talk to a much larger room, but it's going to be a friendly room for the most part. So she's, has a lot of supports, and she needs to be able to she has an opportunity here to reintroduce herself to the country.
We're almost out of time. Go ahead,
sure,
Sam.
I just don't think it's an accident that her high watermarks for favorability ratings were when she was actually doing the work of governance and not doing the work of campaigning. She's a politician. She's a very good politician. She's not a very good campaigner. And when she was at Secretary of State's office in Foggy Bottom, she got rave reviews from both people, Republicans and Democrats. When she worked in the Senate, she was so good at it that they became known as the Hillary model. Keep your head down. Get the work done and so on and so forth. It's when she's campaigning, it's when she was first lady on the trail with her husband, that's when people find her.
When she did education reform in Arkansas, same thing. Popular until she started campaigning. It's a good point.
And people seem to like her when her husband misbehaves, and she has to sort of carry the situation for that. Well, my thanks to all three of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Sam Stein has been a guest on Radio Times over the years, but we've never met before.
We got to thank the band, too, for chiming in on a few points.
Exactly.
There.
Sam, thank you for joining us. And he's senior politics editor for the Huffington Post. Ron Fournier, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
And he's at the WHYY studio, senior politics columnist for National Journal, wrote a book a couple of months ago, Love That Boy, about his son, and was a guest on Radio Times talking about that. And Domenico Montanaro, hope we can have our paths will cross sometime this week. Thank you for joining us as well on Radio Times.
It was a pleasure. You're welcome.
And that's Domenico Montanaro, lead editor of politics and digital audience for NPR. And again, we are joining you from the Wells Fargo Center here in South Philadelphia. And that's the site of the DNC getting underway. Well, we're about halfway through two solid weeks of convention coverage, so we decided to step into the neighborhood for a few minutes. And with the DNC getting underway in South Philadelphia, we sent Radio Times producer Elizabeth Fiedler to North Philadelphia to talk with residents about politics, about the last 8 years, race, and the crime they deal with every day. At the corner of 3rd and Norris Streets, Liz caught up with a group of men who recently released an anti-violence song encouraging people to stop shooting each other and not deal drugs. Let's listen.
My name is Sean Levin Banks Sr., but you can call me Frog. That's what all the kids call me in the hood. F is for because I'm free. I do what I want because I'm under God. You know what I mean? I'm raw. That means something from the hood. I'm ready and willing at all time for whatever. The O is because I'm outgoing, and G is because I'm gifted, and the other G is because I'm godly. Right. And that's what Frog stands for. And, you know, I'm CEO of Phillywood Entertainment. We have a music production and film production company. And Phillywood 7 is a nonprofit organization where we do conflict resolution, gang prevention, mentoring, and peer mediation. What's going on out here in America is just ridiculous. As you know, I was one of the biggest drug dealers in Philly and got kidnapped. And so it was full circle to me to come back and help. In order for me to help to get that message out, music is powerful. So I did a Stop the Violence song in 07 with a couple of different artists from Philly. And we went around a little bit and we spread the message. But it just seems right now in 2016, it's just like more shootings, more babies getting killed. It's not even just the drugs. It's just the mindset, the, you know, the internet, the following, the bullies. So with the hook on the song, what's up, Jay? That really sends a message to the kids where we coming from with positive music.
Stop all the killing, man, put the guns down. Stop all the dealing, man, put the drugs down. Stop all the cutting, man, go to school now. Put the guns down. Stop all the killing, man, put the guns down. Stop all the dealing, man, put the drugs down. Stop all the cutting, man, go to school now. Put the
It's heavy and it's hard because I got kids growing up. And I know right now we could come from the studio and be in the mix of what's going on out here in society. Whether it's the police, you know, pulling us over and stopping us, or whether it's another guy, a black guy, or a white guy, whoever, with a gun. It's just too many guns in America. Once you pull that trigger and that bullet fly, you can't pull that bullet back. And I done seen a lot of bullets rip the little kids up. I played with them before. I shot at people. People shot at me. I was a drug dealer, so that was part of the game. But I never hurt any kids. I never hurt any women. And I could come back. Even though I was doing what was wrong, it was still rules to where I came from. Wasn't no drive-by shootings. Wasn't me getting mad at a dude because he got on Jordans. We ain't come from that. So I don't understand this era. Everybody worrying about, is the woman going to win or is the man going to win? Bottom line, Trump's a rich man. He don't know nothing about the hood, and he don't care about the hood. So how can he think for the hood? So for we put somebody in that office for us, it won't work for us. Because right now, all these neighborhoods are going through regentrification, and a lot of these other people that grew up here is getting pushed out, and they don't know what to do. So I just hope the best. I would vote for Hillary because I like where she come from, and she give us more of a chance. So Barack done put up so many laws, and he did the best he can. But if you don't have Congress supporting you right to change something, he's just a president there getting frustrated because he don't have the people behind him helping him push it through. So right now, it's still a Republican world, and I hope all the Democrats can wake up and not just sell their souls for money and because they're Democrats, but make a change right now because our future is very bleak in America. We used to be one of the most powerful countries, but now I think we were the one of the most vulnerable and weakest countries. I mean, we got money, but the way we let everybody in and so much going on with our schools, we weak.
Could you give me your name?
My name is Angel Laraquente. I'm known out here as Resort. And we want to let everybody know that, you know, stuff out here, violent crimes, it's getting worse. I got nine kids. You know, I got five of my own four that I raised. And for me to step out my door and see what's going on out here, you know, it's painful. It's painful because I grew up, you know, I grew up where the next man was able to tell you something and send you home. You know, these days nobody obliged to that. You know, they just obliged to, you know, they do what they want to do or, you know, how they want to come up.
Wait, what do you mean? You mean like if you were a kid and you're misbehaving, like your neighbor would tell you to
straighten up? Exactly. When I was a kid and I did something bad in the street, my neighbor would grab me by my ears and take me right to my doorstep and take me to my mom, and my mom will handle the rest. You know, it was none of that. You're going to go out there and be disrespectful to your adults, so none of that. My mom wouldn't play that, you know. And these days, you know, it's not like that no more. You know, you can't even tell K.O., can you do me a favor, move off my steps without them saying something to you, you know.
Did you grow up around here, yes, North Philly, near 30 North?
I grew up on North Philly in the Badland Park section my whole life. I was born and raised here. I was incarcerated and sentenced to an adult prison at the age of 15. You know, I was a juvenile, you know, and I got sentenced as an adult, and I did my time. And, you know, it's not just politically, you know, the neighborhood, everybody, your neighbors, you know, the people out here, the community got to start stepping up. You know what I mean? Start changing things, because if we don't change out here, if the community doesn't change itself, nothing's going to get changed. We need to unite and, you know, and go against all this violence that's happening, you know, and teach our kids better, you know.
Do you feel like life around here is worse or better than it was 8 years ago?
It's definitely worse.
How so?
It's more killings. You know, it's the younger generations, more younger generations is very disrespectful. There's not listening to their parents. Parents are not enforcing, you know, respect. You know, the generation these days, is they just running wild. When I grew up, we came out and it was 50 kids and 50 kids playing football, or they playing freeze tags, or 1-2-3 red light, or we go to the park and play handball, basketball. You don't see that no more. And when you do see that now, if somebody loses, it's about a fight. You know, why you want that? You know, there's nobody to manage them. Like, okay, you lost, you know, there's nobody to manage them. They throw them in the park and just let them do what they want to do, and fights breaks out, and then that's when all the commotion starts. Thank you.
What's your name?
It's Max Spielberg. Spielberg, S-P-I-L-L, not like Spielberg.
What do you think about the presidential campaign? Have you been following it as the DNC is about to arrive?
I've been following it, but I can honestly say I can't put a hand up for either presidential candidate. I really can't.
Why?
I guess distrust for the most part, to be honest. Looking at both their histories side by side, I really don't trust either one of them, to be honest. Like, I may vote, but as for right now, I can't say who I'll raise a flag for.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember 8 years ago, like, as Obama was coming into office, what were you thinking about? And has it come into fruition? Has it actually happened?
Like, my expectations weren't really that high, considering the situation with, you know, how the systems we're dealing with, as far as the justice systems and economic situations and just whole social problems we have. I didn't think putting a certain president in office would change that. But I did think it would change certain attitudes between certain groups of Americans, being that, you know, we've had a consistent situation where there's been no non-white presidents. So I think it did change attitudes in that kind of respect.
Do you think life's better than it was 8 years ago, or, like, around, especially around here?
I would say about the same. I mean, there's some things that are better, some things that are worse, but it's kind of pretty much rounding out. Like, you still have the same issues with the homelessness, the same issues with the poor schooling and things of that nature, the police brutality and all them things going on. And then you have your own crime within your own communities, all that kind of stuff. It's kind of pretty much at the same standstill. I like to see more people taking care of each other and less hate towards each other and less needless drama.
That's Radio Times' Liz Fiedler talking with Philadelphia residents in North Philadelphia about politics and life in this city. And that's it for today's edition of Radio Times. Our thanks to everyone at WHYY, including our intern Madison Poulter, Nick Kowalski on our telephones, and Susan Greenbaum producing things up there at WHYY, and Kevin Griffin, our engineer, and of course Emily Bryant, one of the Radio Times producers. And down here on Radio Row at the Wells Fargo Center, Adam Stanton, Nashevsky, our engineer, and producers Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Liz Fiedler. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us.